Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah. We didn't get enough last time. So I feel that we should talk more about heaven and things like that. Some little beyond life type activity.
Death and life.
Yeah.
And struggling.
Right. And all of
fear.
That.
What great choices you've made.
Oh, you know, you bet. So we're going to talk about, this is the latest one in our Pixar series. Calling it that.
Yeah.
And this is Soul. Directed by Pete Docter and Kemp Powers. And it came out in 2020, which was right in the midst of COVID. So I'm pretty sure it went straight to Disney Plus, even though that is not what they had intended.
Which is too bad, because I think that really, of course, affected it financially. It says it didn't make as much as it costs, but it's such a great movie. I mean, Pete Docter has a real touch for looking at people's deepest fears.
Yeah.
And making it so entertaining while you're looking at it.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. And let's see, which other ones did he direct? I mean, Up, right?
He wrote Up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Inside Out, right. In fact, I can see, let's figure out which ones he directed. Inside Out, he directed. He did direct Up as well as write it. Monsters, Inc.
Oh my gosh.
So those are the three big ones, it looks like.
Okay. That's I like that, because he starts off with the deepest fear of the monster in your closet.
Yeah.
That is perfect.
That's one of my favorite ones.
My husband, loves it.
Does Soul reach, let's say, you don't have to list them, but say your top five Pixar movies? Is it in there?
Golly, I'm trying to think. So The Incredibles, of course, Toy Story, and all three Toy Stories. So really, that's five.
Wow, right? How about that?
Or not, but let's count them as one. But yeah, I mean, it's right up there. That's so good.
I was just curious if it,
yeah,
how you felt about this movie in relation to the other Pixar movies. Yeah,
because
I think so too. It's definitely in my top five.
And yeah, I would
put
like
Monsters, Inc.
Up.
And The Incredibles. Definitely one of the Toy Stories. I would have to decide which one. It's between 2 and 3.
That's funny. For me, it's between 1 and 3.
1 and 3. Okay. So we can agree on 3.
They're all good. Yeah.
I thought Coco was
amazing.
Great.
Coco was all right.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, see, it wasn't one of my favorites.
Okay. But anyway. But yeah, so a lot of good
anyway,
films.
Anyway, this
a lot of good
one
films,
is,
yeah. But I'm glad it's up there anyway.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it's terrific, you know. And of course, the word soul kind of has a double meaning, because we are talking about the soul, people's souls. Period, you know. And also the music that's in this movie, yeah. Which is, I think it's by. So there was somebody who did a score. But there was also, his name is John Batiste, who did the jazz pieces.
Yeah.
And the score, and then, interestingly enough, was Trent Reznor, who is one of Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, really? That's so funny.
It is funny. And he's scored other films, too. But I like the score of this movie, too, even beyond the jazz.
Well, and kind of, I can't remember the guy who did the jazz that you said, but he's in that sense,
John Batiste.
Like, yeah, how could I forget? I'm sorry. I apologize.
Come on.
But I know, man, that he's like, T-Bone Burnett for Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah.
You know, the person who knows all the stuff and either writes or gathers together the people who epitomize what's going on, and the music is so important in this movie.
Oh, it so is. Yeah, very much. Yeah. And a quick mention of the cast. We have Jamie Foxx as the lead character, Joe. Tina Fey is 22, who we'll talk about for sure. Graham Norton, who is like a talk show host in England. He was Moonwind.
Oh, yeah, he's, yeah.
And, he's good. Yeah, let's see. Alice Braga, Richard Ayode. I never know how to pronounce his last name. I don't
know any of those people. But
Richard, he's great. If you've ever seen the IT Crowd, he was Moss. Yeah.
Of course he was Moss. Mm-hmm. To me, Angela Bassett was so good.
Yeah, she plays Joe's mom. And there's a guy, Questlove. Yeah, that's who he...
I thought she played...
Oh, I'm okay, sorry. So you have I'm to sorry. Cut this
out. I thought she played musician.
You're right. I'm wrong. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, the mom was great and all.
Felicia Rashad played her mom, yeah. Or Joe's mom. And well, Angela Bassett plays Dorothea Williams, who was awesome.
Yeah.
Had to love that. Had to love that.
So they had an all-star cast. And it was good.
Yeah, it was interesting to learn just a little bit about the development process, which is something I'm fascinated with, especially with Pixar. But they were, you know, it seemed to be Pete Docter trying to work out, you know, he's got this general idea and they were considering, the lead character, let's make that character a scientist. And ended up, he said, musician's just way better. You know, there's mm-hmm. more of a soul to that, right?
It's, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then as they started cruising along and they realized, we want to do jazz and everything, that's when he brought in the second director who had, comes from the background and everything. So he had a lot to add and a lot to talk about there. Right. Yeah. So, but it's just a terrific movie. The look of it is absolutely stunning. You can just stare at all that art. It's so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Just beautiful from beginning to end. So Joe is a high school or middle school. I can't remember. I think it was middle school. Middle school music teacher. And, you know, one of the first scenes we see him in is... him teaching, and there's like a little prodigy there, somebody who's super good at the mm-hmm. saxophone. She's great. And but anyway, you're just showing him his life as he's trying to inspire these kids to see music the way he does, and doesn't quite get through to them, at least as far as we can tell, except for maybe that one person who, you know, is just so good. You know, it's like, you know, there's a connection there. And, but he's dream, you know, he's a middle school teacher, a middle school band teacher, but his dream is to play, jazz on the stage. And, you know, so he's offered a full-time job as a middle school band teacher right there at that first scene. And,
wait, did you just say he's offered a job, full-time job as a middle school teacher?
Yeah, so he's so at the
that's
okay.
You skipped around. I skipped around.
Yeah, so in right after that first scene, it turns out that we know that he's like a temp or some kind of a part time person or whatever. But the administrator comes down and is like, "Hey, guess what? You don't have to worry about that anymore. Right. You know, full time." And he's like, "I don't know that I want to be that."
He's like, but that cuts off my dreams. That cuts off anything else I could do because I have to commit to this, which is not that rewarding.
Exactly. And so his mom runs, I guess, a dress shop. Where she does like alterations and things like that. She's a seamstress, I guess. Is that the right word?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, so he goes to her and her friends and he's, "Hey, you know, so I got this offer, but you know, I'm not sure I'm going to take it." And his mom is like, "Of course you're going to take it because, you know, she was married to a man who also had dreams and never realized them and, had passed away, not realizing them. And she was like, "No, you need stability. You know, you need stability. You need to do this. Take that thing." You know, and he's like, "Okay, I will."
Right.
But then he gets a call from a former student on the phone. And his former student said, "Hey, I'm playing with Dorothea Williams, who is, you know, apparently quite awesome." And Joe knows exactly who she is. And he says, "Oh, I would... die if I could, or I would die happy," I think is what he said.
Sure
"I would
does.
Die happy if I could play with Dorothea Williams." Little foreshadowing.
Yeah.
And then he says, "Well, this might be your lucky day, you know." So he said, "The person that we had playing piano for us just took off, and we need somebody in a big hurry for a show tonight. get down here and let's play and see if you can get the job. So he shows up. Dorothea Williams is there. He plays. He impresses her. And she says, get yourself a suit. We'll see you tonight. And of course, he's just over the moon. So happy. And he's out skipping around and avoiding all these major accidents. I loved that whole scene. And just when you think he's safe, he falls down a manhole. And much to my surprise, when I saw it the first time, he was dead. I was like, is he really, you know, what the heck is going on here? But now he's a spirit. He's a soul, right? A spirit. And we see in the light. He's seeing the things that our previous book told us all about. He's seeing a light to go toward. He's seeing people. And they're saying, go to the light. And he turns around and runs away from it.
I just got my big chance with Dorothea Williams. You're not taking that thing away from me.
This is not what's happening. Yeah. So he turns and runs the opposite direction. And then that is really where the movie takes off. And we start to see what the afterlife is like and all kinds of things from there.
Yeah, it's really creative because it's what? The Great Beyond and the Great Before.
Yeah.
And so the Great Before, he winds up in a place that's really kind of the movie makers musing about what is it like before people are born. Mm. I mean, before souls are ready to go. They just need to get to the body. And so that's really fascinating. And I think I remember reading it was based on Greek philosophy or some such thing. But it doesn't matter. It opens up a lot of scope for them to look at how do we think today about all kinds of things?
Hmm.
What do we do with our lives? What is the point of being alive? And you wouldn't think of that from this movie, but that's what the whole movie's about.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really great.
It really is. Yeah. It's life affirming. It is.
Oh, man.
You just feel good. I feel good watching this movie. Oh,
yes. I hate to think. Well, there just several times there might have been tears while I was watching toward the end, especially.
No, I was a rock. It was beautiful. I was a rock. I didn't have any emotions at all watching this.
So manly.
So yeah, incredibly so. But yeah, it was extremely touching. Yeah, and there was I mean, one particular scene that we might need to talk about it later. So I don't know if we need to go over the spoiler line or but really what it's about is his experience of being in this afterlife, this beyond or before, and working out his stuff. Right.
Yeah, grappling with the idea that he finally everything was opening up for him and it was all taken away. So what's he left with?
Yeah.
He's trying to get it back.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to get it back.
Yeah.
Even with heaven right in front of him.
Well, that's it. He views that as there's no talk made about whatever heaven is.
Mm-hmm.
He just knows he doesn't want it. Life on Earth was just going to do what he wanted and that's what he wants. So.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yep. And I think that's something we all grapple with at certain points in our life, you know.
I think so, too.
So, it's again, like I said, this is one of Joe Doctor?
Pete Doctor.
Joe Gardner.
Uh-huh.
Pete Doctor. And Gardner, I think, is an important part of his name. But Pete Doctor is really good at taking, like I said, these deep-seated questions of human existence and going, hey, I got a fun idea. Let's do this. And so you have a great time watching it, maybe even a little happy crying at the end. And, you know, you get some stuff to think about.
Yeah, I think about, like, his previous ones, like Up, and how hard that first 10 minutes was. And it's not unlike Disney. I mean, I think of The Lion King and that tough one with Mustafa, you know. I mean, it was hard enough that I was like, should kids be watching this? You know what I mean? should kids be here? You
I think
know?
I've but told it's, you about it's that. All the Hannah truth. Stood up and walked out at that
did
point.
She really? Oh, they that's were, great.
She
I forgot
and Rose
if you
were
did.
Little. Yeah, and I had to kind of get up and grab her and put her on my lap and go, no, it's going to be all right. And I look over at Rose like, oh, no, she's 2 years younger. What's going to happen? She's sitting there just popping popcorn in her mouth like, where's the story going, man? Yeah, Hannah, who's reacting like any regular person.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so great. I love that a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's not, you know, like unheard of territory. And
well, Bambi.
And yeah, oh, Bambi. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was hard.
You don't see that, but it doesn't matter. You know,
I know.
What's going on.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was rough. That one hurts. I mean, they all mm-hmm. hurt, but I mean, that one is like, man. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, but Pete Docter somehow has this touch that allows him to talk about this thing, or, you know, in a story. Like Up, you know, once you get past that point, is really terrific. And I mean, he does it here, but we never, I mean, it's like Joe dies, but he's never really gone. I mean, we're with him immediately. And I kind of like how it, you know, I don't recall Joe, and you could correct me if I'm wrong. I don't remember Joe ever saying, am I dead? It was like, we're figuring it out as he's figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty neat how he did that. Because it's a mystery. It's like, you know, what's going on here? What, he just fell down a hole and now we got this and what,
he's on this stairway,
right? And now we're like,
elevator
we just
or
kind
escalator.
Of realize, you know, yes. As he's figuring it out, we figured it out. I just thought it was done so well, you know, so Joe was never gone to the viewer. And so it wasn't as impactful as something like Up was.
Well, and the thing that surprises me, though, is it was impactful in a different way to me, because I had actually, I knew he died, and I knew he died pretty early, but I didn't realize how soon he died.
Mm.
I think I thought a little more was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just goes down the manhole and I'm like, oh no, no, he just got this. He just, oh crap. He did say he'd die happy. He'd die a happy man, but he does not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we, so. And it's interesting. I mean, how many times have we seen a cartoon figure fall down a manhole?
Yeah.
So it's, Bunny, you know, I imagine if you will watch this with an audience in a theater, that would be a laugh moment. And then suddenly,
mm-hmm.
you'd be like, oh, that's not funny. You know, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, so I imagine that's how that would go. But obviously, I've never seen it with the theater.
No, because it doesn't feel, the movie doesn't feel cartoony at that point.
No, but that's,
it does feel
that
cartoony
same thing
later.
When you fall down the hole and the papers fly in the air and then they kind of float down the hole. I mean, it's something we've seen. How many times have we seen it? And it's funny every time it happens.
But I've never laughed when I saw it in this movie.
It's slapstick, yeah.
They make it real.
Right. Yeah, true.
It's, you know, the stuff that happens when he's in the grate before, the, you know, there's all kinds of things that happen. Or later on, when he's basically a spirit or a soul, there are a lot of things that happen there that are slapsticky and funny and cartoony.
Yeah.
But the beginning part is not that way. The
you're
beginning
right.
part it is isn't. Very realistic. So you've, I mean, to me, I felt it. So,
mm-hmm.
so they're gauging their tone carefully and, you know, helping you feel what they want you to feel. So, and I guess we're into spoilers.
Yeah. So off we go. Off we go into the great beyond.
Okay.
So definitely watch the movie if you haven't.
Okay. Yes.
So, yeah. But yeah, so it's terrific. He turns and runs the other way, but then he ends up, through some shenanigans, ends up, in the grate before, which is where souls are preparing to go to Earth and, you know, be united with bodies, and they're getting trained and stuff, you know, that's kind of fun. They're learning what their spark is. They've got these little badges that they have to fill, like as if they're like scouts or something. So they got these little badges they need to fill before they're ready to go. and a bunch of people named Jerry.
Yeah.
A bunch of people named Jerry do the training, you know, which kind is great.
Shepherd them around.
Yeah, shepherd them around. And
I do want to say that's the first time I ever heard of Quiet Coyote. That little hand gesture they make.
Yeah.
That looks like a coyote with the two outside fingers up and then the two top fingers on the thumb, and it looks like a little coyote. I'm in love with that gesture. I don't have a reason to use it, but I'm like, it looks just like a coyote. I love it.
I love that. So clever. That's really cool. Yeah. I'd never heard of it before then either.
Right. And I think it's a classic classroom thing, actually. But since I'd never heard of it, it was funny to me. So the thing with the Great Beyond that's interesting is certainly with the presentation at the beginning, it's what is going to be your passion? Are you going to love science? Are you going to love chess? Are you going to love bicycling? It's not always, I guess, something that's very high level and important, but it's, you kind of feel like this is the thing that's going to drive their life, because Joe spent the whole first part of the movie. Okay. Well, it was a short first part, but the time we've seen him, that's the one thing he cares about. Music is all he cares about. And he explains that to his mother when she's like, can you not just work a regular job? And he goes, this is all I am. I wake up and everything is music to me. And I think about it and I play it and everything. And this is my big chance to really be that person. And so because that has been set for us as what is driving his life, when they're explaining this spark idea and we're seeing them, the little souls that are going to go down to Earth and become born, find their spark, we're like, oh, you find these are the people who'd be a great scientist, a great athlete, a great whatever it is they're going to do. And of course, then 22 has been there.
That's right.
She's been there from the beginning.
Yeah, she's been there for so long. I love that character. And it's a, you know, contrast to Joe, right? Joe is consumed by his spark, and 22 can't find hers. And they're, you know, Joe's like, I'm going to help you find that thing.
Well, no, he doesn't want to, right? He gets assigned to it because he's pretending to be someone else.
Exactly.
Someone has figured out he's not made it where he should, and so they're trying to track him down, and so he's kind of on the lam, and he gets mistaken identity'd.
I love
right
it.
Into being.
I love that the tutor. She's had many, many tutors, and one of them was Mother Teresa, who had no patience for 22, even in the afterlife. That just made me laugh.
I have patience for every living creature, but not you. They did such a great job.
That was nice. Yeah. Too funny.
Broke even Mother Teresa. That's how bad she is.
Oh, shoot. And Copernicus. I think they mentioned him too. Yep.
Well, yes. Well, and what of course gets pointed out is, you know, 22 is avoiding finding a spark because 22 doesn't want to be born. 22 is like, this is stupid. Who cares?
Yeah.
And of course, what happens is that you find out that because 22 never could find her spark and misunderstood what the spark was, she basically was rejecting all of it because she was so inadequate feeling.
Right.
Yeah. It's because nobody adequately could explain it.
Yeah. And that's interesting thing to think about. Either no one could adequately explain it, or she was just never ready to hear it. Until the experience she had. Yeah.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Because Joe gets told at some point, you know, your spark is not your purpose.
Right.
And he's like, what? No. I got my spark, and they're like, nobody ever understands this.
That's right.
So hard to get people to understand it. Mm-hmm. And that naturally made me think about the problem a lot of young people have right now, young adults, is they have been taught, I guess by their baby boomer parents or whatever, that, you know, live your passion, work your passion. This is who you are. You should change the world or something, or be the best at whatever it is. And I remember having a talk with one of my daughters who is was facing the idea of just having a regular job that wasn't anything she studied or anything like this, and talking about that very thing of, but everybody in my generation has been raised to think that. I was like, well, not by me.
Yeah.
Not by your father. Because we were from a generation that knew you just go out and get a job. You may or may not like it, but you'll find something you like in it, or you'll get a different job. I mean, this is your job, not who you are.
Right. Yep.
So yeah, I loved it that the I loved that the whole movie was attacking that way of thinking by showing a completely alternate way of thinking, which is the point of life is to live.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Right. That's the point of life, which is, I love it.
I mean, there are other things you can do that may be rewarding in ways you didn't expect, like when Joe finds out through part of the movie that the person he was teaching, who was so inspired, is not going to quit music lessons because of him. You know, because he helped bring out that love of music for her. And that student he had who's playing with Dorothea Williams, who said, man, you're the only person who ever believed in me, who ever got me.
Yeah,
you made me understand myself better.
Yeah.
And so that's when I thought, oh, well, his name is Gardner. And he's assigned to be a mentor to 22, but he's always been a mentor. He hasn't seen it that way.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but through being who he is, he has helped nurture the people who were interested in the stuff he was interested in. And they were able to become more of themselves because of it and grow.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. I love that connection. Gardner. Yeah. And then his flaw, you know, was that he was consumed by that passion. To the detriment, right? To the detriment. So he was so obsessed with it. I remember when he was getting his haircut, and 22 was actually in his body, but 22 is getting her haircut, I guess. But as him, and she just asked the barber a little bit about himself. And the next thing you know, the barber's just talking away about his life. And then at the very end, he says, yeah, you've never asked me about my life before. And it's just a realization that all this stuff is going on around you and you're consumed, you know. It's just an unbalance, right? That's what Lent's all about, right? Trying to find the balance back and try to get it back.
He's at that point is being really selfish without realizing it, because everything revolves around that one thing that he wants.
Yeah.
And I loved that. That's one of my favorite parts of the movie. The barber talked about how he wanted to be a vet, but it couldn't be. So now he's a barber. But instead of, like Joe, kind of resenting it and always trying to get out of it and find, you know, that perfect gig, he embraces it and says, but here's what I do through being a barber. This job, it matters too.
Yeah, right.
He doesn't have to have that spark for it.
Yeah.
Because he lives. It's part of living. Right.
Yes, exactly. Oh, that's good. Yep. Yeah. And that is. But that is what, you know, they're learning. I mean, 22 and Joe get to learn that. At the same time, both from the opposite ends of that spectrum. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that we forget about being human beings. We're so used to it. And watching 22 was so... For one thing, it was funny because they made it funny, but it was also fun because as she's going, oh, and I think I'm going to die soon because my stomach hurts so much, she gets her piece of pizza. And she's like, this is amazing. You know, this is so good.
Oh, yes.
Just savoring the small things in life.
Oh, yeah. And I remember Joe as the cat just watching her lay on the ground, rolling around or doing what she was doing, and just realizing it's just like, I would never do that, you know, and why not?
Yeah.
I love it.
Of course, those are all the things that kids do too.
Yeah.
Cause she's experiencing it and he's forgotten how to do that.
Right. Yeah. So I love, so they figure out how to get to the earth, and when they get to the earth, Joe ends up in a cat's body and 22 ends up in his. And that was brilliant. It was so cool because of all the things that could happen then. Just such a great decision.
Well, it takes it back to the cartoon roots that you were talking about.
Mm.
You know, the identities are completely flipped. So there's all this, and she doesn't know anything about being a human being or living on Earth or anything. So there's all the really funny stuff that's happening around the serious questions that are being looked at.
Right, right.
Like how to get the elevator to move.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. It was just great. You know, so, I mean, everything through that was just terrifically well done. And then the part that luckily I didn't cry over was at the very end when they're headed back to Earth, but now it's 22's turn. And mm-hmm. he lets 22 go as they're flying towards Earth. And yeah. Luckily, I'm a rock.
And he's getting tugged back. He's
just like, yeah, because he doesn't get to go. I mean, he's done, right? At least he thinks so at that point. And he lets her go. I mean, it's like letting your kid go to kindergarten.
Yeah. He's being selfless. I mean, before he was trying, he took the badge and he was trying to grab it from her.
Yes. Yeah.
But now she has discovered. It's just about she's gotten her spark or her badge or whatever because she has discovered that she wants to be alive.
Mm, yep.
It's being alive that is the spark.
There it is. Yep.
The other things, the things that like Joe, the passion that Joe had, that's an expression of that. Mm. And everybody's got their own individual way to be.
Right.
And of course, Catholics will say, you know, everybody has gifts when they're born and all the gifts are different.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the cooperative thing, right? The parents create the body. God instantly creates the soul.
Yeah.
According with his plan. But, of course, that makes it sound like you're stuffed in there just like Joe thinks he is or 22 thinks she should be with some big purpose and the big plan. But it's about how you live it. It's about you experiencing it and all the decisions that you make in accordance with what you think is right or what you should be doing.
Yeah.
And so, Christians would say, or Catholics, we're both, it's the same thing. You know, you're expressing yourself, but trying to cooperate with God as you understand it at the same time. How does God want you to live your life? Well, you know, here's the commandments, here's this, here's that. You probably have something else you're doing, raising your family, doing your job well, all these things, but it's how you cooperate with God while you're doing it.
Hmm.
That's all goes into being your spark and living your life.
Yeah, indeed. And then keeping God at the top of the mountain means that the rest of it falls into place.
Yeah.
You will not have the unbalance, right? There's only one thing that can be at the top.
Right.
And we all are always coming up with things to put up there.
Well, yeah.
All of our golden calves, right? Just, yeah.
That's right. Joe's golden calf was getting that gig. And I love, as everybody does who sees this, when he's played his first gig, it was magical. Mm. He was in the zone. Then he comes out and he goes, well, now what? And she goes, what do you mean? We come back tomorrow and do it again.
Mm.
And he's like, but I thought it would feel different. And she's like, well, no, this is just what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. She tells the fish story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She says, well, it's something like one fish goes to another fish and says, hey, I'm trying to find the ocean. And the other fish says, the ocean? You know, you're in it right now. And then the young fish says, this? No, this is water. What I want is the ocean. And that's it. That's all she says, you know. Yeah. And she says, see you tomorrow.
Like, what?
And he's just like thinking, it's like it was here the whole time, right?
Yeah.
It's here. You're surrounded by it. That
you're swimming in
the ocean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's great. Yeah. I mean, just so it was great. And I love that gig, too. I mean, they play the gig, and I just love, I mean, that's the jazz thing. And I saw a couple things talking about how accurate, I mean, all the fingering and everything and the playing the piano. They paid attention to all these details. and that it was a magical gig, something that it was like, you know, they nailed it. You know, there's just something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, yeah, that doesn't happen every night. And it was his first one. And mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah, you know, I think we in life, we have these peak moments, these times where it seems transcendent, you know, that it everything just seems perfect. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't last, but it's we experience it sometimes.
And we always want it to last. And yeah. we think back and we wish it had lasted. And of course, that will be heaven.
Right.
Whatever heaven mm-hmm. is like, it will be like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but things, all the time. Yeah, we're in a constant state of change, so nothing can last. It's not yeah. possible, right? Not possible right. here.
No. Nope.
But God is the Alpha and Omega, unchangeable. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yet, heaven won't be static.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah, because when I was just thinking, when you say we wish it would last and in heaven it will last, that makes it sound like you're sitting there looking at a sunset forever or whatever it is.
Yeah, like a photograph, Polaroid.
Yeah, that perfect day. And, of course, that's not it because we'll all be still active.
Right, right.
Seeing the face of God, interacting with each other.
Yeah.
Whatever it is we do there because
yeah.
we're made how we're made. And so heaven will be something that makes us satisfied in our need for creativity and all the stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Right. And our wills aligned, right?
It's going to, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll love it as much as we should. So that will be that perfect gig.
Yeah. I explained that to someone not too long ago. They're just talking about, well, that sounds horrible. You go to heaven and your will is taken over? I was like, no, that's not it at all.
No,
that
man.
That is not correct. What's correct is that your will goes in line with God's. And, yeah, because you reach a state at which, you know, what you want is the same thing. So
that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And how great is it when you're talking to somebody, like how much you and I love this movie, and we can just go, oh, yeah, and this, and this, mm-hmm. and this, and we're both getting very yeah. happy about it. It's helping us relive it. We're, you know, becoming better friends, all the things. Well, heaven's like that to the umpteenth degree.
Yeah, for sure.
That's our wills are in alignment at this moment.
Yeah, I love that. And I love, so what you mentioned, I feel like I mentioned this on the podcast before, but Bishop Barron talks about the transcendent third. He talks about it when he's talking about marriage. Usually it's like, people get closer when there's a third thing that they both love. And the ideal thing is God. I mean, that's the ultimate thing, right? When you both love God in a marriage, that becomes the transcendent third, right? And you become closer. So just the same way we're talking about this movie that we love, this has become this third thing in our lives, you know, apart from God. God is higher, but this thing, you know, we 330 episodes, we're still talking, and you know what I mean? So, but we're in love with this third thing, and that's what makes us close or helps the relationship, you know?
Well, exactly. And creates the relationship. Cause we, you know,
yeah,
we're good friends now.
Right,
and we were
right.
friends at the beginning, but not like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and the third thing, when you said, you know, of course, God's the top one, I'm like, but of course, we're doing this. This began because we wanted to talk about God more.
Yeah.
How do we see him in all these places?
Yeah.
You know, we talk about the traces of the one reality. Well, the one reality is God. That is the most real you can get. So when we're seeing all that stuff, we're talking about, and I saw him here, and I saw him there. And it's really, you know.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Yeah, that third thing.
Right. For those of you, I mean, some people have heard that, but yeah, we had done a podcast together on a different podcast, sffaudio.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But anyway, and after that, we were talking and said, you know, if we talked about this as Catholics, which we should be, it's just, it opens up all these other doors. And that started the whole thing. Just us starting to talk about that. And hey, wouldn't this be great to talk about differently?
Right.
And, you know, with God right there.
Yeah, it's interesting because the main host, or I guess you and Jesse were the main hosts together of that podcast. He had very open to talking about all that stuff.
Yeah.
But there's something about talking about it as two believers versus allowing this in also as just another way to look at a story that brings it to a different level, at least when you're the two people experiencing the story that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because the whole time you're reading the story, it just has a different focus also, or watching a movie.
You bet.
Yeah.
I love it. So yeah. So what did you think of Moonwind? Moonwind with the boat.
With the sign. I loved that when he's in the zone, it's because he's twirling one of those signs going, go over here and buy this thing. It's like, oh, here's how I get in the zone. And I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. Really, it's the only way you can keep doing that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, he's in this meditative state. He can reach up into the great beyond.
You know, that was another interesting facet. And it was kind of almost like parts of Inside Out, but with the scary stuff. I love one of the things, I think it's Moonwind who says it, the zone is enjoyable, but when that joy becomes an obsession, one becomes disconnected from life.
Yeah.
And so that's another facet of looking at, here's my spark, here's my focus, here's my passion, I have to do this thing, nothing else is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're able to achieve that, but then that's the only thing you're focused on. And like he says, you become disconnected from all the other things in life.
Right.
And it turns you into a monster.
Right. So it got a little Dante-esque there for a minute. Yeah, you know, sure, but that's what it's like, okay, this is where the people go that are obsessed.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of felt like that to me.
Oh, it was terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 And the things they were obsessed with were things that were familiar, but stupid. Because they weren't my things.
Yes, right. That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. I think they said, here's some finance guy or something like that. And like, you're like, yeah, well, that makes sense to me, but I'm not a finance guy. Some people really love it.
I know, he stands up and goes, I've wasted my whole life on nothing or whatever it was, and runs out of the office yes, you can do finance, but keep it within reason.
That's right. Too good. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was really an interesting look from so many angles at all the ways people get focused on the wrong thing because it's something that's important to them. But as you say, they become unbalanced. They're either avoiding it, like 22, or, letting it run their lives. Or, you know, once they achieve it, letting it really take over their lives, like the people in the zone.
Yeah. Yep. Just great. But yeah, just love this movie.
Well, and the whole jazz focus was brilliant, not only because the music was amazing, but... the whole idea of that what jazz does, at least especially the kind that Joe was playing, although all jazz kind of has that element going back, is you've got the main tune, everybody knows the main tune, but then you're riffing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody kind of gets their turn, and then sometimes they riff together on it. Well, that's life. We have the main tune. Nice.
Yeah.
But we're riffing on it in our own way.
How fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So John Batiste says that he created a user-friendly jazz, which felt authentic, but could still be appreciated by a general audience.
You felt like you were smart listening to it because it wasn't the regular kind of jazz you think of. But yeah, the fact that we all loved it means it was accessible. That was well done of him.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, he's great. I just know him. He was on Stephen Colbert's show for a while.
Oh.
He was the music guy on that late night show for a while.
Okay.
He's not anymore, but he was for a long time.
I remember him. I mean, I just remember him being funny and, you know, pleasant. And I don't remember. I didn't watch it enough to really have a sense of it like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You bet. But, yeah, really good. And then the score, you know, I've been getting into movie scores a lot in the last couple of years. I just love them.
But we have
Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross of Nine Inch Nails composed the ambient score for the metaphysical segments of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Yeah. Yeah, you've got to get the 9-inch nails to do that.
Only they can truly see to the other side of this music, even absolutely. If they have to pound it in with a huge hammer.
You bet, you bet. Yeah, so it says here, too, and I'm on Wikipedia now, Soul grossed $620,000 domestically and $121 million in other territories for a worldwide gross of $121.6 million. And again, that was really due to COVID because it ended up right on Disney Plus. But it says, let's see. I'm just looking at more grosses. I can't figure out how much it cost them to make it, though.
$150 million.
$150, so it didn't quite break even.
No.
It's amazing that it costs that much. But I know you got to pay all the actors and stuff. And what does it take them, 2 years to?
Well, the actors, but yeah. the rendering and everything.
Yeah,
and
all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Animation is so time-consuming that way.
I used to know for sure, but I wonder how long it takes them to make these nowadays. It says here, Doctor conceived Soul in January of 2016.
Mm.
Came out in 2020. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that doesn't
only
mean,
4 years.
That doesn't mean they were hard like
very
at work
long
on it.
To me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've got to write it. You have to get it approved. You have to go through how many takes, and you got the second director or writer or whoever in, and so that changed the focus again.
Yeah,
but that's what you have to do when you're creating something like that.
Yeah.
Something I did want to mention also that we haven't mentioned, and I guess we're getting close to the end here.
Sure.
So I feel like this is this way for everybody, but so I'm not special in this sense, but my favorite part, I feel like, of course, was the montage as Joe remembers his life.
Mm.
There was a lot of crying going on then. not noisy, quiet, appreciative crying.
Yes. But
one of the things that was really great was him taking all those little things that looked like nothing out of his pocket. All those things that 22 had collected. And lying them on his piano and looking at them and realizing, you know, the little seed pod and everything. I mean, because that thing where looking up through the tree was just a transcendent moment every time it happened in that movie.
Yeah.
But all those little tiny things, those are representative of the little tiny things that make up our everyday lives that we don't think about. But of course, that's what makes life special because they lead you to those moments of remembering, like he was remembering his father teaching him to play the piano or with music somehow. He's looking up through the tree. He's remembering the pizza. There's lollipop or whatever. He's remembering all kinds of things. And and that's how it is when we think back through our lives.
Mm.
It's not linear usually, unless you're trying to remember something specific.
Yeah.
Just stuff.
Right. Yeah, just stuff. Yeah, I love it.
But it's
it.
Our stuff.
It is our stuff. Yes, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago, I learned to journal in a specific way, which is not like, hey, let's sit down and write paragraphs on how I feel today.
In my diary.
But it was more like, this is what happened today in a very terse way. Just like, you know, had this event at work, right?
Oh, okay.
And that's it, right? But I'm not writing how I feel about the event or whatever.
Right.
But when you look back on that, it opens up like a montage. It's just like, oh, I remember that event, you know, and you let you know, oh yeah, that's when this guy said that thing, you know, and you're just not, it just like opens the doors. And,
I like that idea. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I like it quite a bit. But I've been doing it for a little while now. Usually, you know, I fall behind all the time. Like I'm behind right now, but I usually try to catch up. But it's just like just writing a line.
So every day is like a line or two of something important that seemed to
something
happen?
Something that happened today. You know, and sometimes there's more than one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, picked up my daughter from the airport. Or, you know, something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, and they're just like, oh, yeah, she went to the thing. And, you know, yeah. So it's neat. I really find it rewarding. I think it's kind of cool because I have journaled in a way where I am like, this is how I feel. And it's like angst and all this other stuff. And when I read that, it's really cringy to me. It's not, it's like, I really, yeah. you know, I'm not sure what it. The worth of that is, you know?
Well, I will say that Tom was reading, my husband Tom was reading Eisenhower, a big, big book about Eisenhower a while back, a long time ago, actually. And he said Eisenhower kept a diary like every day, all through the war, his presidency, probably way before that. And he said, but the thing was, he never went back and reread it. And either somewhere else connected to that or in that book, the author said, it might have been like David McCullough or somebody said, because that's not the point of that kind of diary. That kind of journal or diary is so you can get your thoughts out and kind of organize them and understand how you feel about them. So it's like telling a story to someone where you're really sorting things out. And he goes, and once that's done, you don't need it anymore.
Right. You figured it out.
But
right.
Yeah, you've sorted other people it, might right. like to read it. But so it's funny because those are two different kinds of journaling. And I was like, your kind is interesting to me because it is like what I do during my daily examine, which may last maybe 5 minutes, if that, where I'm just going, what are the things that seemed important today? And what it does is it forces me to think back through my day in more detail than I usually would, like at all. But then I'll go, oh, here were two things. Is there one of them that I think that I like better than the other because it brought me closer to you, or I don't want to do that again, or, you know, so I learned something or whatever. And then, of course, and I know I've talked about this before here, and then I give God the chance to, and was there something you thought was important? I mean, what was it? I know there's something God thought was important.
Yeah.
But am I going to be able to pick up on the signal on that, you know?
That's right.
And if something different than I, sometimes something that never even thought of pops into my head. And I go, I'll take it.
Yeah.
But so that kind of journaling you're talking about sounds related to that. Not the same thing.
It is related to that because, when you take a minute to just contemplate your day, those things do come forward. And it could be like something someone said. That might be something I wrote down. Like, this person said this to me, right? That might be something.
Yeah.
So, but it's exactly what you're saying. So I keep that. And then the other thing that I keep, and I know you do something similar, is I would just call it a book journal or a commonplace book. And I think in your commonplace book, that's where I would write a quote, or it's almost like a diary of my reading life. You know, I try to write a little bit about everything I read in there. And it's just, you know, like, oh, I read this short story today. This was interesting. You know, and I would expound on that more, like my feelings and stuff about what I'm reading. I do write that stuff in there. But yeah, so I keep two different things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what I do is I, on Goodreads and Letterboxd for movies, I review every movie or book that I read, but it may just be a couple of sentences. It may just be something like, oh, I see where everyone liked this, but I didn't like this thing about it, because I assume that people who are reading my review already know what the book is about, at least from the description. They're trying to decide, do they want to read it or not or whatever. And, so that it's just for me to make that comment, and something that I really like, then I will expand on the review a lot, and it usually winds up on the blog as well as on Goodreads. Or, you know, Letterboxd as well as on my blog. So that's where I'm writing those comments, and I find them quite helpful when I go back and go, oh, look, I've read Emma. This is my third time to read Emma. What did I say? Wow, I was very insightful before. I'm going to look out for this stuff. I didn't remember it at all. Yeah,
very good.
So, so that's where I keep those things. And I have, I call it a quote journal, but you're right, it's more like a commonplace book. But it started with me just writing quotes I like out of different things. So as you say, kind of like a book journal in that sense. Now I also write my bullet point notes for our recordings.
Oh, nice. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I just write them in the order wherever they come. And on the front page of the book, I have, here's my page number, which I've had to write page numbers in these notebooks now. Mm-hmm. But here's my page number for where I can find it in case somebody asks me about the book or like my book club might read or watch something.
Oh, very good. Mm-hmm.
And then every weekend I have, this is so much about journaling, but you guys just have to start doing something, I guess.
We've gone into a tangent, yeah, but I love
it. Well, that's it. This is where we are. We're riffing on it. We're jazzing it. Isn't that what she said? I'm jazzing.
You're jazzing, yep.
And you jazzed before, so we're jazzing on journals. So, and so every weekend, though, I write down what did we make for dinner during the weekend? What did we watch? What have I finished reading that week? And then if there's special things, because I will look back and go, I feel like something for springtime.
Uh-huh.
What have we had in the previous April and Mays in the last few years? I'll just flip back through and see what did I write down that we ate and go, oh, I forgot we even made that ever.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's also kind of a reference book for that kind of thing.
That's the kind of thing that it's really valuable for me too. You know, when I look back on that thing, you know, just every now and then you do it. But yeah, it's like, oh, you know, I don't know that I ever would have remembered that ever, you know, because the memory is in there. It's just like what would trigger it. And, you know, just this little tiny event, you know.
No, that's good because I have prayer journal pages in there.
Yeah.
Just occasionally. And when I fill the page up, then I just go to wherever I am and start a new one. And it's just got one line things like, and I came across something because I was looking at old quotes for some reason. And it said, I had this dream and it was this, like this. And then I dreamed that Jesus was there saying I wouldn't be alone during this scary thing. And that's all I wrote. And I went, I forgot all about that, but that's so true.
Oh, you know,
so it's like what you're saying.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do prayer stuff in the commonplace book too, or whatever you would call that. You know, because usually it's triggered by something I'm reading or something like that. But that's where that stuff goes for me.
Mm-hmm. Me too. So
yeah, great. Yeah. I like it. That's great. So good. I love journaling. You know. And
I don't like writing my feelings and stuff. It's what you're saying. I mean, sometimes I'll write a big event down. I did take time and write like two or three pages on the COVID pandemic after it was mostly done.
Yeah.
I went, somebody needs to write this down. And I know people are doing it, but I'm just going to write all my notes here and now I'm done. I don't have to read it again, like you say.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good.
But yeah, I like the idea of the bullet points and so forth. So
yeah, me too.
That's good.
That's nice.
Yep.
Yeah. So one final question. Pixar usually pairs their feature up with a short. Did you look up the short for this one?
What was the short?
It was called Burrow.
What?
And I watched it and it was so good. Burrow, B-U-R-R-O-W.
I know I watched it, but I do not remember.
It's about a rabbit, and it was kind of a older style animation, it felt like. And the rabbit was digging a hole. And it had a little...
I remember nothing. Good prompting. But
anyway, definitely take a look at it. I thought it was kind of cool.
Okay.
I always like them. I always like the shorts. But
us too. And I always watch them. And how did I miss this one?
Well, probably because it went direct to streaming. So I don't know that there's an obvious way to know. I actually had to look it up.
Well, now I know about it. And so now we're going to have to watch it here.
Yeah, go watch it. All the shorts are there on Disney Plus anyway.
Yeah, and we've watched a bunch of them because I love the one, you know, another jazzing moment. I love the one with the great big funny looking bird and all the little tiny birds that are next to it. For the birds,
yes.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorites.
Yep. That one's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, there's other really good ones too.
One would be comparable to that one, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. It's a different style of animation, but it was really, really nice looking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Gonna look that up.
All right. Enjoy.
I will.
Well, thanks for experiencing this one with me again. All right. So next up for us is a book, and it is called Before the Coffee Gets Cold.
It's my book.
Yes. Toshikazu Kawaguchi.
Yes, yeah. And it's a short one, and it's, I can't even think of how to describe it right now. I just think everybody's just going to love it.
We're just going to let her rip. All right, sounds good. I'm in. Yeah, I've got a copy. I'm ready.
Okay, time travel in a Japanese cafe. That's what I have to say.
Very nice. All right.
And you have to finish what you're doing before the coffee gets cold. So try without leaving the table. So good luck, everybody. Good luck.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. Okay.
Looking forward to that very much.
Yes.
All right.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a great couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.